and have a look once again at the components that are in the virtual table now with a little bit more more calm way than we did it the last time. So we've learned that there's several several subtables in the virtual table that belong to different parts of the object representations, which are referred from different virtual table pointers. And in case you have inner parents, you need to also have a separated subtable for each of these inner parents in order to have a chance to refer to these specific thunks instead of the original method. So that's what they were for. So the components of the virtual tables now are, for once, the virtual function pointers, which are always found directly at the memory address where the virtual table pointer is actually pointing to. Same is for the other part. It also has virtual function pointers. In case you want to address these pointers, these virtual functions, then you need to just go on from the first address where you found the first address and go back down to access the other function pointers. But there's also meaningful information if you go backwards with negative indices. For example, for once you find the runtime type information, which is not so important for us, but what's more important is the slot over there with a minus 2 index, which is the offset to top of the enclosing heap object, which is important for doing casts. In case you want to do your own experiments on how virtual tables actually look like, you can do so by just writing your own C++ code and do all the quirky things that you like to do to your classes, and then issue a call to Clang with particular parameters like these, and you'll get a direct image of the virtual table printed out to you in text form. Yeah. So this is, once again, that's something that we have seen the last time. This is the situation with the different differently pointing virtual table pointers and the need for not having an entry of F, but an entry of a thunk of F. And finally, this is the implementation of the thunk. For those of you who have been present at the tutorial, you've seen a version of the thunk where we had a quite obscure way of adjusting the pointer to this. But you see, all the examples that I present you have been at some place. Well, they originate from source code, so or from Clang produced code. So you see that if you're lucky, you get a more readable version of your adjustment of the receiver pointer. So in this case, it's just adjusting the pointer by 16 bytes backwards. So that's more readable than the one that we have found in the tutorial. So, in order to cope with the whole situation, what we need is particular versions of the V tables for inner parents, and they even have names for that in the object files. In this case, it's the B and C virtual table, and the entry for method F in this case is a specific thunk. And in the illustration that you get via the compiler, you will see the you will have direct it will directly mention how far this thunk will modify this pointer. So that's directly mentioned in there. Yeah, so that's what the thunk actually does. And afterwards, it goes out and calls the function that you originally meant to run at that point. Okay, and the original function can then just go on and address all the attributes in the way that it is used to addressing them. So it looks for this method body, it looks as if you would just call on a normal C pointer in this case. So further on, because that's not all what happens here, now we can imagine the thing to get more complicated in case that there are common ancestors involved. For example, in a situation like this, where you don't, you do not even, not only have two parents, but the parents themselves also inherit from somewhere, and you might think of a situation like this one, where both parents inherit from another class, and it may happen that this is exactly the same one. And the standard model, that, well, there's several ways how you can solve that. Either that means that in object representation terms, you would have to keep one representation for this parent of type L, or you would disambiguate between the one that you have inherited from or via the A parent and via the B parent. And turns out that in the standard mode, that would kind of work like this, that you would separate the representations that you obtain via branch A and the ones that you obtain via branch B. So conceptually, you now get two representations of an object of type L in this case. So that's just a kind of sketch. That's not an official class diagram anymore. So for that purpose, what's actually happening is that the whole system works with the principles that we have had last time. So if your class C inherits from class A and B, class A will be put in front and class B will be put in the middle, like this. And A and B are treated as kind of black boxes, for they themselves, A, inherit from class L, and B also inherits from class L. So we get an instance or a representation for L via the branch of A. So we'll find an A representation within A, and we will find an L representation via, an L representation within B, and an L representation within A, like this. And it turns out that I massively messed up my diagram. So A was the green one. What is it? A is the green one and B is the red one. Like that. Okay. So that's the way that you would compose your object representations. But this, of course, has other implications on your behavior during compile time. For example, have a look at once again casting. Casting makes the whole thing really complicated, especially with multiple inheritance. If you now cast to the parent type L, well, or in general, that would be fine to do. However, in our case, that we have, where we have to disambiguate between the branch that we inherit from A and the branch that we inherit from B, we now get a problem. Which of the object representations of L that we have is actually going to be the one that we select by casting up to L? And that's plain ambiguity that needs to be resolved, and the compiler will ask you for resolving that, and turns out that you need to specify the branch that you want to select your parent from, and yeah, the only way that you can get this this cast to run is by explicitly specifying the parent from which to take the ancestor. So that's one source of ambiguity, and there's also another possibility for ambiguities whenever you try to then cast back down to your more specific implementation, object representation, for example, like this, then, well, same problem happens here. You still don't know in which relation the L pointer stands to your C representation, whether the system doesn't really realize the history of what has happened here, especially as history just looks simple in this specific case. You can imagine that the object creation and the actual usage and all these casts happen at quite different positions, which may look like not really related to each other at the first point, and yeah, it's not so trivial to really figure out the relation of the object creation to the actual usage, and there might even be ambiguities due to, well, if you have function calls and all that, so you can't really attach kind of a history to this thing here, especially if you just use plain C pointers as containers for your object representation. So what you need here is, once again, you need to specify the kind of branch that you want to take in order to come up with a restored version of your containing object representation, and that's once again achieved by explicitly saying which way you want your cast to go. So in this case, you would at first need to cast from L to A and only then to C. So that's the only way that you can achieve something like that. If you do that, you completely lose any guarantees in any way. But especially in this case, there's no real guarantee that this will actually do any meaningful thing. If you just cast to a void pointer, you will just make it a generic pointer to the memory, and then if you attach the meaning of a C pointer, for example, well, that
yes, but how does your compiler like know that in this case the casting is not just the memory different between memory pointer to a void or memory pointer to a C?
Well, memory pointer to voids are not really checked, so you will be able to do so, but this might end up in a huge crash. It just doesn't know. It will just do it.
Okay. No okay.
Yeah, it will just point to the wrong thing. So, this later on is another thing to that. The other way that inheriting from common ancestors might happen is the virtual inheritance. So, that is the way to specify that you only want to keep a common ancestor in case that you mention the type several times in your type hierarchy. And this will end up in having only one representation for the parent. So how do we specify that? That's the way that you see it here. You have the common the common base class W, offering a lot of methods, and yeah, then you have A that inherits in a virtual way from W, and you have B that inherits in a virtual way from W, and if you inherit that way, you will make sure that both of them are referring to the same object representation in case that they refer to an attribute from that specific object representation. This means that for these purposes, you have to only keep one instance of the whole thing in memory. However, our scheme with which we arranged the object representations, which would say that the base class of my child class needs to be directly in front of the memory space that I allocate for the child, can't be realized anymore because, well, when we have only one representation of the base class and we have two children that inherit both from that class, then we can't prepend this object representation directly directly in front of both of them because, well, we need to decide on which one. So in the, that case, we won't be able to do to arrange it in any static distance from each other. What does that mean? Well, have a look at how the object representation of this system actually looks like. I've also attached a common child, which is a child of both A and B, to the whole thing, which is the C. So the inheritance between C, A, and B is just happening in the way that we are used to. So for C, we'll just go on and say, well, in the object layout for C, I have two parents, which are A and B, and I put my A representation to the top and my B representation in the middle. However, I cannot continue with our simple object representation layout for the parents of A and B because they are inherited in a virtual way. And yeah, for that we now have to make a choice where to actually place this fraction of memory for representing W. And well, as there's just no possibility for finding a spot with a static distance to both of them in a way that will be in all representations where we find A and B objects, well, we will just give up on our premise and say, well, we won't be able to statically refer to the attributes of the representation of W anymore, but each time that we address one of these attributes, we will have to look up the actual position of the representation of the common base class. And this gives us the chance to move around the representation of W to any place where we actually want it. And well, it so happens that for our implementation, it just appends the object representation of W to the end of the rest of the object representation. However, this also this is just not the end here. In order to now address, for example, the attribute small w from our W representation from the methods f and g that are specified, for example, in this method f that are specified from A, we now need to somehow find a way to access this W. And since there's no static distance anymore, we have to have a way to look that distance somehow up. And for that, there's a new thing coming into our translation concepts here, and that is the pointer to the virtual base. And that is, or at least the distance to the virtual base. That is another field that is added to the virtual table. In this case, at position, well, if you count, you have to go 1, 2, 3 fields backwards. And if you go backwards 3 times, you will find the slot where the distance from the current object representation to its virtual base representation is found. That's what this delta W wants to say. That is this delta W is this distance here. Of course, if you want to address your virtual parent not relative to A, but for example, in case that you have casted to the parent B, you might be also interested in the virtual parent. In this case, you will come through another way. You will come through base pointer pointing over here, and you will go this way over here. You go 3 times back, and you will reach this thing. And this is also giving you the difference from your actual current object representation to the representation of your parent, because, well, what you find here is delta W minus delta B. Delta B is this thing, and if you subtract both from each other, then you will end up, of course, with this distance here. Okay, so that is the purpose of this field in case of virtual inheritance. So, well, what else is there? Just to give you an intuition on whether this is actually, just a moment, but this is actually or where the potential for different distances to your virtual parents actually come from. Here's an example. So here you'll find if you don't look at this class over here, that's still the same structure than we had on the slide before. So this thing here corresponds to the object representation from here. But now, if you uncover the part down there, we'll end up with a combination like this, which will add another way of representing objects that have something to do with A, B, and C in there. But in this case, due to our construction principle, we have to append the representation of D at the bottom of C. So in this case, there's these two components that have to go in there where there has been nothing before. So this is the cause why the representation of W actually kind of moves from here to here. And this is due to just other class specifications that inherit from the classes that you have had before. And depending on whether the user now instantiates a class of type C or a class of type D, you will get different object layouts with different differences in positions of the virtual parent compared to their virtual children. You had a question. In the tables for virtual children, you have three slots over here, if you look carefully, like these. And for a virtual base, you only have two. So the delta W is the same thing as it is for the others. It's the content of the second slot reachable from the entry into the thing, which is just the distance from the enclosing object representation.
So that's like delta B.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, and for the cases that you have virtually inherited parents, you now have another problem because, well, now that we have that, we can, of course, cast up to this virtual parent in a unique way because if you know the complete layout of our C object, we can find the entry point where the representation of W actually starts because, well, that's statically known at construction or at compile time. However, if you try to cast back to your child class, if you try to do that in a static way, you now end up with a problem because, well, what should the actual value be that you should put into the address computation there? It's not really clear. So the concept is now to go away from static casting because that won't work anymore. Adding just a compile time constant can't do the job in that situation. However, there's a solution for that. You can do dynamic casting, which is the thing that you see over here, which is a different concept. And what that does is this actually reads out the pointer to the top and will do the cast along that way. And that would probably also be the way to get rid of a lot of these static cast problems here. So dynamic cast is the thing that you should use in these situations. And I'm not really a C++ expert, but I've been told that dynamic cast would be the principle to go for anyway for a lot of these things. So, well, but that's definitely the application for that thing. Okay, so static casting won't work, but dynamic casting does use the offset to top. So, however, we're not quite done yet. There's still one thing to look out for, because if you think back at what we've done last time, we've been talking about the things that you have to do when you do casting and try to call overwritten instances of your methods. Well, once again, what you need to provide to your method that you're actually going to call is it wants to have the most specific the representation of the type that is most specific and known to the method body. meaning if you overwrite your method in class C, for example, you need a pointer to a class C for the receiver or this pointer. However, as we have heard, when you do casts to your base classes, at some point you won't end up with these appropriate this pointers, but instead with pointers to parents. And this is especially problematic if you don't go through your inheritance chain just with plain inheritance, but if you at some point have virtual inheritance with a common ancestor, you will you won't be able to readjust your this pointer with the technique that we have had before, which was just the ordinary static thunk, because that was the idea. We introduced a trampoline function between the original function and the entry in the virtual table, which would do all the adjusting. However, in our case, we can't do a static address computation anymore, because now in virtual parents, we have the situation that the distance to the virtual parents actually varies depending on the distance to the virtual parent actually varies between the specifics in which our virtual parent was inherited. So if you come from class D or class C, it differs. And the next thing is that for each of the entries that you have in your virtual method, you might end up with a different amount that you have to change your this pointer, because, well, this is dependent on the actual instance with which you have overwritten your method. So if you have it overwritten in W or in B or in some parent of W, it completely changes. So we can't have a static value anymore, which we can give to the thunk. So what we will instead introduce is the virtual thunk that does even more. So now we have an even more complicated virtual table. The virtual parent now has, once again, a different layout than the virtual child. The virtual child just has a pointer to, or well, not the pointer, but the difference from its own representation to its virtual parent stored in the virtual table over here. But the virtual parent, in comparison to that, has even more entries over here. And this is a dynamic number of entries, which coincides with the number of entries that you have as function pointers down there. And the way that you have to read that is that there's relations between these entries and these entries. So you go if you address a method n times down from the virtual table pointer, you have you will reach, for example, in this case, if you go two times down, you will reach the thunk belonging to the method H. H was specified in object C. I think I have just the abbreviated version of the specifications over here. However, if you go three times up through the chain, you will get the actual amount or the actual distance that you have to go from your representation to reach the representation of C, which is the representation that belongs to the overwritten version of H, which was specified in C. That's why there's the difference to C found over here. So for each of the overwritten versions of methods over there, you find the distances to the particular object representations that belong to that function, so that overwritten version of your function. And this enables us to have a virtual func, which takes over the role of the static func that we had before. And what it needs to do is it needs to adjust this pointer to a pointer that is compatible with the actual overwritten version of the method that we want to call. And, well, that can be achieved by, for example, if you want to realize the virtual func for the G method. G is the one that you find going one slot further from the virtual pointer. Well, you have to go the same amount backwards. So, well, you have to still count these. Oh no. These are the ones that you have to bridge anyway. So there's 8 bytes that you have to go backward anyway, and then there's still is it 8 bytes? Well,
4, 8. Should be, I would say.
Anyway, in principle, this should. This index should, in principle, point to this entry over here, which belongs to G. The 32 in the V calls. I'm just trying to decipher what why it's exactly 32 in this case. Probably 8 bytes, is it? Per memory cell on a 64-bit. Yeah, on a 64-bit should be 8 bytes. So 32 times a byte should be 4 slots backwards. So that would fit. So that should probably be the explanation for the 32 here. So in principle, you go back 4 slots because you have to skip through the runtime type information and the pointer to the top, and then only begin these specific entries for the distances to the particular object representations belonging to the virtual methods. Okay, so the layout for the virtual table once again has changed. Here's more detailed explanations to that. So there's two kinds of virtual tables now. There's the virtual table for a virtual subclass, and this gets just a new entry, which is the virtual base pointer, and then there's the virtual table for the virtual base, which in turn also gets new entries, which are these ones here, which are the virtual call offsets. We've talked a lot about that on the last slide. So all the others remain kind of the same. So in order for the whole system to work together, what you have is you have collaboration between the compile time and the runtime. And what the compiler does at compile time for this to work is that it generates, well, at least in the unoptimized version, one code block for each method and one virtual table for each class within a class composition. Well, at most, depending on whether it appears as a multiple inheritance base class or not. And in that virtual table, you have pointers to particular implementations of methods, and you navigate these virtual tables via kind of mapping the unique signatures of the virtual methods to some kind of number. You have subtables for composed subclasses, and you also have top of object pointers and virtual base offsets in subtables, at least potentially. And for virtual thunks, you also need virtual call slots in your virtual table. What at runtimes happens is that program startup kind of generates the virtual tables automatically for you. In most cases, you find just images of static memory in the object files, which are then just copied into your process's memory. So you find the virtual tables copied from the object files in there. And allocation of the memory space for each object is done at first whenever you do a new on a class, and afterwards there's constructor calls. And inside the constructor calls, what will happen is that the virtual table pointers, which reside potentially within an object representation in case you have virtual methods, is initialized to point to the at program startup generated virtual tables, and that already suffices to create the frame for your objects. After that, you can have the user code, which then initializes your fields appropriately. And afterwards, the method calls are just not really aware of the runtime type of the objects that are found there, but stupidly, statically address at in the virtual table with the unique identifier that each of the signatures actually gets, and the address that's found there is just called and assumed to be compatible with the preparations that we've done on the environment, like parameter evaluation and the receiver pointer. Okay, for dynamic casts, we might, in this case, then also use the offset to top field in, not in the objects, in the virtual table, of course, so that's not in vtables. That's where the offset to top field is actually found. So, yeah. That's how these work together. That's a slide about kind of giving you advantages and disadvantages of this approach. I'm not a huge fan because I don't really program either of them in a kind of software engineering compatible way. Anyway, what you get from these is, one side says that, of course, the supporters for multiple inheritance says that especially this diamond pattern, where you have this very complicated layouts of your object, that's something that you have to explicitly specify that actually happens, and it turns out that in practice also it doesn't happen so often, so most layouts won't be as difficult as the one that you've seen there, and what you get with multiple inheritance outweighs the standard inheritance in so many ways, because it just lifts a constraint on the number of parents, and that comes kind of naturally to you. And the other side says, the implementation for not having multiple inheritance in the implementation way but just only interface inheritance is much, much simpler to be achieved. So there's a lot of hassle that you don't have to go through. Casts actually do nothing in that environment, and you don't have to cope with difficult extra entries into your virtual tables. Virtual tables are kind of condensed only in just a simple list. There's nothing really difficult happening there. If you're in a hurry and have to come up with an implementation for a multiple inheritance or with an inheritance system, then that's probably the way to go for. And also, well, that's of course polemics here. If you find a lot of this appliances for multiple inheritance in your code, then, well, your design is kind of questionable, and you should go through the whole system and redesign it once again, because that's not something that you want to have in any way. So for us, it's more important how we can actually realize that. We have heard about how to organize heaps for class hierarchies and their representations. We have heard about virtual table layout. We've seen how the LLVM intermediate representation code actually looks like and how it realizes access to certain features of your objects. We have seen an alternative to explicit disambiguation of ambiguous parents, which is linearization. And we have seen what you get when you try to support full multiple inheritance in implementation and all the hassles that you have to go through to keep up with your virtual table layout. So that's what the whole thing was about. If you're more interested in such things, and if you're more on the Windows world, so to say, then you might find it interesting that, for example, the Microsoft C++ environment does things a little bit differently. The approach that you've seen so far is the one that is pursued within GNU C++ and the LLVM and Clang compilers. Microsoft's Visual C++ approaches the whole thing a little bit differently. It distributes the components a little bit different to that. Virtual tables are split into smaller tables and considered to be different. And there's also these virtual base pointers which reside within the object representation instead of the virtual table in the Microsoft world. So, yeah, there's certain differences, but in principle, the problems remain the same. So if you're interested in these kind of things, then there's a lot of literature that you can read for that. With that, I want to leave that area and go on. So is there still a question while I have these slides on? Yeah. Yes. Well, you mean with these virtual base pointers? Well, you can just extend.
You just add on top. Okay.
You just need to have a unique numbering scheme in order to access the relevant slots in the virtual table. Because you know from sorry? There's no real precedence between them, so it doesn't really matter how you enumerate them. It's just one enumeration is fine.
The virtual tags, the offsets they have for the virtual tag point to the specific function they have to go to, or to the representation of the class.
The representation of the class. Of the object representation, of course, not of the class.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
well,
the function, the function
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, so it's actually a distance that you find here, not a real address. Well, that's you have to have these virtual tables kind of globally, so they are not recreated in each time that you have a new object. So you need to have distances instead of absolute classes, absolute addresses. Okay. So if that's all, then we should probably leave that.